You are listening to John Diard's Life Spa, your premier source for health news and Ayurveda, where modern science meets ancient wisdom.
Okay, so welcome to our podcast called Wake Up Without the Wake Up Call. I'm going to introduce my guest here, David Evans, in just a second, but I want to talk to you all about my experience and why we're actually doing this podcast. When I first came back from India in 1986, I ran and co-directed Deepak Chopra Center in Massachusetts for about 8 years. And it was like a cancer Ayurveda clinic. We had many cancer and terminally ill patients coming to our clinic. And lots of them did, you know, Western medicine. Lots of them did completely natural medicine. And lots of them did a little bit of both. And what I noticed being there for 8 years was that it didn't really seem to matter whether they did one treatment or another, the kind of the common denominator for people to really do well as a result of their diagnosis was when they would come up to me and say something like, you know, John, this is the best thing that ever happened to me, that I'm super thankful and I'm super grateful for this experience of cancer. It literally changed my life. And, you know, I spent 8 years in a cancer clinic watching that and doing that. I was back in 86, and we're still going and still constantly hearing people's stories of really significant diagnoses and then moving through these challenges and getting through them and really living the life that they were meant to live and desire to live and hope to live. But somehow life, stress, trauma, taxes, money, jobs, everything just sort of takes the wind out of our sails, and we sometimes never get to experience that life. And then when you get a diagnosis that's pretty, you know, life-threatening, sometimes you're just faced with, you know what, I'm going to do me finally and take that. So I was like, why can't we do that without the wake-up call? How can we wake up without the wake-up call? How can we get ourselves to a place where we really make those changes in life, live the life we were meant to live? That's what this conference call is about. I met David, and he started telling me his story. And he's a cancer survivor, and he did it without Western medicine. And I want to go into, you know, this story with David and talk to him about what he went through to get to the place where he, you know, really woke up. And I think it's going to be a fascinating, interesting story. So I'd like to welcome Mr. David Evans, a great friend of mine.
Thank you,
cancer
John.
Cancer survivor.
Thank you.
I'm just so happy that he's here and willing to share his story with us. And thank you. David, I'd love for you to start by, you know, take me through that moment when you were diagnosed. What was that like? I mean, how did that feel?
Absolutely. Back in 1995, I hadn't been feeling well, and I was weak, and I didn't have much energy. And a friend of mine, a local doctor where I was living, told me, suggested I should go in and get some blood tests and so forth, and I did. And they had diagnosed me with having leukemia. And fortunately for me, I had an oncologist that said, well, the symptoms and the markers and everything aren't adding up. And I was absolutely, terrified for the fact that I realized that now I've become mortal. I mean, sitting across and hearing a diagnosis from a doctor that tells you that you have a stage and you have leukemia, and the prognosis is going to be a long one, was absolutely just devastating. It was, I couldn't grasp it. I couldn't, I remember when I walked out of his office, I sat in the parking lot and I thought that this was just a dream. This was something that wasn't really going to happen to me. It happens to everybody else, but it doesn't happen to me.
Yeah.
But we found out that I was misdiagnosed.
Wow.
In 95. But that was the catalyst that made me, for 6 or 7 months during that period, I kept reflecting back to my life, my lifestyles, the choices I had made, the things I had done. I was making deals with God, I was making deals with the universe, I was making deals anywhere and everywhere I could.
What kind of deals were you making?
Oh, get me out of this one. God, spirit guides, whoever you are out there, get me out of this. If you can get me out of this,
I'll never curse again or something.
I'll never curse. I'll never drink. I'll never smoke. I mean, I was making these deals with the universe because I was blaming myself literally for the choices I had made that created this disease inside of me. What I did not realize was that was the incubation period of me learning a lot of becoming my own self-advocate and start really learning about cancer. It doesn't matter whether it's cancer. It doesn't matter what it is. It could be AIDS. It could be any disease that we're walking with. But it began to make me realize that if I have to second guess all my choices in my life, then I really need to reevaluate my life.
Right.
And I'm a kid from Nebraska, okay? So, John, I do not know anything about Eastern philosophies or whatever, but I met a friend of mine, her name's Marlene, and she started to teach me about Eastern philosophies and things that were going on at that particular time, and it started to be an awakening. And as that was going on in that period of time, I had a tragedy. My son died, and I was having a terrible time grieving. And Marlene introduced me to, she took me to Los Angeles, and I was introduced for the first time in my life, Buddhist monks.
So hang on a second. This 1995, you were misdiagnosed with leukemia.
That's right.
When did your son pass away?
Right after that.
Wow. Okay. All right. So we're on track.
We're on track.
And then you met Marlene. And then what happened?
Well, I couldn't grieve. I had a terrible process. I was not grieving. And so she invited me to come to Los Angeles. And I went and I met these monks. At the time, the Dalai Lama was traveling across the United States. And I was introduced to these monks that taught me the process of just trying to help me grieve through things. And as I was trying to learn to grieve through, why I wasn't grieving, I didn't know if there's a proper way to grieve or not, but whatever it was, I wasn't doing it. And so I realized all the deals that I had made with the universe and everything had gone flat. It wasn't working. So now, I mean, how can I make deals with the universe and then turn around and you take my son?
Did you blame the universe or...
I was blaming anybody and everybody. Okay. I was blaming all scenarios to the point of I had lost basically all hope.
Yeah.
And I didn't have any direction. What happens is we find out I was misdiagnosed, and when that happened, I didn't want to renege on all the promises I said I would do in this universe.
Right.
So I started really thinking about it, thinking about these monks that had never, you know, they taught me so much about my philosophies and my life that I need to learn that I did not know. And I realized when they said, well, you don't have cancer, I started wondering, what can I do now to change that? So I tried to change my life. I started to exercise. I started to try to be more compassionate and trying to be kinder. I tried to do things to make me mentally and physically strong. But then, in the year 2000, I was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma stage 4.
Okay, wait a minute. So here's an interesting point. I mean, you got the diagnosis. You changed your life.
In all the
right ways.
Yes.
And then the reward for that was to actually get diagnosed with stage 4 Hodgkin's disease.
Which I didn't trust.
Right, of course, now.
Because now I'm going, wait a minute.
And the point that I want to make before we go any further is that we are in no way saying that, you know, if you get diagnosed with cancer, it's because you did something wrong in your life, or you were mentally, you created it with your mind, that somehow you created it mentally and emotionally, and you're sort of in charge of that.
Right.
And by unraveling the mental and emotional piece, you're going to fix it. That's not the point of our discussion, because it was completely the opposite with you.
Yes.
The point of our discussion is that, and we're going to finish your story here in a minute, but is to wake up without the wake-up call. So I want to keep reminding people, because a lot of us are listening, don't have that diagnosis.
That's right.
But we're not also living the life that we were, that we really knew or set out to live in the beginning. And that's what we're trying to find. How can we get to that joy and that passion and live that life to the fullest now without that diagnosis? So yeah. Continue. So now, tell me, take me through that experience. Now they tell you, you've got stage 4 cancer.
Yes. Now it's the real deal.
Yeah.
So I had to rethink about all the things I had to, you know, discuss. Unfortunately, I had a friend of mine who was a doctor that was based, he was trained in Western medicine, but he had Eastern philosophies. And he kept, because listen, what I want to share with some of you folks out there is it's not about the cancer, all right? There's things that go on in this world that we're not really, once you get diagnosed, that's only a piece of it. What I was shocked about what was happening to me was, one, I was devastated by the amount of loneliness and aloneness that I felt. I felt, even though I had support systems and I had doctors and I had nurses, what was really, what caught me totally off guard was when I would go to bed at night, and if any of you are out there and you've been diagnosed, you'll understand this place. You go to bed at night, and when you're sitting there with your head on the pillow and the covers are up, I mean, I was terrified. I was absolutely terrified. And I realized that the only person that's going to change any outcome, besides the medical aspect of it, was going to be myself and my mental awareness. And what am I going to do? What am I going to do to change my life? And I'm not talking about a game. I'm not talking about false words. I'm talking about you have to make a commitment to do something. And I don't want it to sound corny or off the wall. I mean, I really was terrified. I was crying. I was alone, and even though I had people, because when you go into treatments and you go into these situations, you're basically all by yourself. And this was the awakening for me. This was the beginning of it.
Let me ask you a question. Now, was that choice to cure the cancer, or was it just to get rid of the terror?
Both.
Were you thinking that because you did it the first time and it didn't really work.
Mm-hmm.
So what made you think that you were in a different place then?
Months had gone, and I was waiting for the doctor to come in and say, oh, by the way, we made a mistake.
Right.
But that wasn't happening. So they had already lined up for me to have chemo treatment, chemotherapy, and radiation. And I said, well, before I'm going into that world, I asked a friend of mine that was a doctor, and I said, I need to do some more research. I need to go someplace and find some things out. So we made an appointment to John Wayne Cancer Institute in Los Angeles and UCLA Medical. And fortunately for me, I met some doctors that were there from Germany that had just begun using laser treatments to start dissolving the tumors. So I was feeling weak, sweaty, achy. I had really not very much strength at all. And I just kept talking to myself and trying to explain to myself that, you know, David, you have to be your own advocate. You really are going to have to hunker down, and you're going to have to do things that aren't the status quo of everybody else. I would go into therapy sessions with people, and there's a psychiatrist that was there. I'll never forget this. And there'd be 24 people pre and post treatment in these therapy sessions. And the psychiatrist pulled me aside one day and he says, you know, I can tell when somebody's going to make it and when they're not going to make it. And he says, you've got to choose, David, or what role you want to play. He says, because sadly, family victims and family members and everything would like to have you play the victim role.
Right.
And he says, I never see those people really doing very much and getting well because of that role. And he says, people want to play that role for you, and they want you to stay in that place. And you have to make a choice. Is that the place you want to be? Or do you really want to try and give yourself every opportunity possible to survive this. And we're not talking about just minutes, we're talking days and weeks. And I have never in my life, and I will never ever forget how much and how precious it really is. And it can be so redundant. You can hear that all day long. You can hear that all day long. But the psychiatrist set me down and talked to him, and he says, you know, you've got this attitude about you. And he says, I really want to tap into that a little bit more, because he says, I think you're going to do well here. I think you're going to do well in your treatments. And he says, I think you're going to do well in your recovery process.
It's interesting that you say that, because, you know, what he was saying was the people who become the victim, and it's pretty easy to be the victim because you sort of are,
mm-hmm.
right? And then everybody around you feeds that mentality. And, you know, I talk a lot about in my articles that we are hardwired as young children to want approval from mom and dad and want love and approval. And we spend most of our life trying to get that approval from mom and dad. We replace them with boyfriends and girlfriends and money and power.
Absolutely.
And jobs. And now we have, you know, shopping and all kinds of reward-based chemistries that we become attached to and we become addicted to. And that oftentimes is why we aren't living the life are meant to live, because we keep looking to get this reward. If I do X, I'll get Y back. If I love you a lot, I'll get love back. But somehow the love that I get never really feels enough, so I never feel satisfied, and you're always wanting more and more and more. And so what you're saying is that being diagnosed like that, if you let yourself slip into the victim thing, then you're basically getting a lot of attention that feeds that childlike hardwire,
yes.
which needs approval.
Yes.
And it's sort of like, you know, sort of a negative version of that, you know, and I think that's something that was, and I'm curious with you, like, the doctor told you about that.
Yes.
But somehow you saw something in you that you were already, that you had the ability not to go down that road.
Yes, I refused the normal treatments, and I said that we've got to find another option. I had gone through two chemo treatments, and I will share this with you. I felt I had lost everything that I had control of. I was literally crawling on the floor of the hotel I was staying at. I kept saying, if this is the treatment, then I'd rather die, because this is worse than anything I've ever felt. Uh-huh. I'd never in my whole life felt so vulnerable.
Okay.
So I kept thinking, this just can't be the answer. This cannot be the answer.
Right.
And again, I was blessed to have a few people that kept saying, well, let's try another alternative. Let's look at different directions.
Right.
But David, you've got to mentally wake up. You've got to be strong. Because you're right, John, we get caught up in old stories in our minds, and we play them over and over and over again, and we believe them.
Right.
And I got to tell you, folks out there, it is so hard to change that direction. And it's so hard to change it when you have people that are enabling you to stay where you are.
Right.
Because I hate to say it, but some people like you there. They want you to be there.
And to be clear, to make the decisions that you made, other than not doing chemo, you can do chemo and make those decisions. You can not do chemo.
You can do it. Yes,
doesn't
right.
matter. You chose to not be the victim, because that's how it was dealt to you. To, you know, chemo was so bad, you're like, I can't do it. And then you took over and said what?
Well, one of the reasons I didn't want to get into the chemotherapy, I didn't want to go into all of those kind of things, is I'm a recovering alcoholic. And I don't need a lot of reasons for me to go back and start drinking. I don't need permission to do those kind of things. I just realized that I had one of the gifts I wanted to give myself. Now, you know, I don't know whether alcoholism was a contributor to any of this that happened to me. It doesn't matter. Or my lifestyle previous to all this. But I realized that I only had so many streets I could go down. I only had this much control in my life. I knew only that much, and I knew it all started with what I thought, how I thought, and what could I do about it. That's why I started exercising. I needed to get control back into my life, because I had all these people. I had people walking into rooms that I did not know their names, that would tell me this, 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 and this. Do this, don't do that, whatever. And I felt absolutely powerless and vulnerable. And I've never been one to feel, you know, quite to that extent the way I felt.
Did you obviously, you know, got through the alcoholism?
Yes.
And what year was that?
1989. I've been sober for about 27 years. My last drink was in 1989, December, as a matter of fact, this month.
So was it the same kind of tools that you used to get through that gave you the strength to stiff arm? Because that's a pretty scary thing to do for people, and I'm not advocating that by any means, because now the chemo, the cancer therapies are, you know, light years where they were back then.
That's right.
And, you know, but somehow you had some incredible fortitude to make a decision like that. Where did that come from?
Well, actually, John, that was my second time getting sober.
Oh.
I had gone through a treatment for 30 days to get sober my first time. Uh-huh. And part of that awakening started there. I was sober for 3 years, and then I went out and I drank, and I thought that I could get sober again the next night. And I guess, as they say, I didn't hit enough rock bottoms. So I literally had to go to a place where most people don't ever want to venture, to a place where you don't even recognize yourself. And that's when the building blocks started for my mental stamina and my wherewithal to start working through issues. I realized that if I didn't get help, I was in trouble with alcohol. And so going into treatment gave me some tools, but I did go back and drink, and I drank for 5 years, and I there again felt completely helpless. But that was the beginning of my life changes. John, you talk about rewards, you know. I'd make all these deals. I always make deals with the universe and God and everybody. So I was smoking at the time. So I decided, well, okay, I'm not going to have a cigarette until I go out and walk a block or 2 blocks or 3 blocks. And then when I come home, I'm going to have a cigarette. I'm not going to have a drink, but I'm going to have a cigarette. And pretty soon, the cigarettes became less and less. Mm-hmm. The blocks became miles. And in that beginning is where it all started to change for me mentally. I'm at one of the biggest thrills I ever had was I asked myself if I could run 1 mile, 1 mile. And the day that I did that mile, it was as if I just blossomed. It had started this chain reaction of, you can do this. And that's what's so hard is because, you know, John, we battle all these old stories in our minds all the time, or what the doctors and the professionals are trying, and there are many, and they do their jobs and they do them well. But the battle isn't with them. The battle is what's going on within me and myself and my mental strength and or weakness, whatever you want to call it. And when I began to realize that I can make this. I can change my day. That's all I've got was this one day.
So that was, that mile was the second bout with alcoholism.
That was right.
Now you're battling the Hodgkin's disease. What decisions did you make to change your life then, to live the life that you always wanted to live? And what were those decisions? And what was the life that you always wanted to live?
My life was always, the life I wanted to be was just to be okay and comfortable within my own skin.
Mm-hmm.
Because when being an alcoholic and having cancer made me feel like I was dirty, I was
broken. Yeah,
I was absolutely a lost cause. And what was so frightening about that feeling was it was so familiar. Because I'd spent most of my life in that lost cause environment. Mm-hmm. I'd felt it all my life. And everybody kept telling me the deck was stacked against me. I'm just one of those poor blokes that, you know what, these are the hands that you're dealt. This is what you got to do.
Right.
And I will tell this to everybody. the most saving thing that ever happened to me that changed my life, that started to give me a little bit of self-worth, believe it or not, was simple. It was putting one foot in front of the other and starting to exercise. Just starting to move. Just to give myself some type of familiar balance that I never had before. Mm-hmm. And because everything I had either involved alcohol, drugs, cigarettes,
right,
you know, stress, all these things.
And you saw yourself improving, getting stronger.
So very much.
There was a reward there.
And I kept thinking, if I can make my mind strong.
Right.
And now I'm going into like a second year with non-Hodgkin's, and I've not, my stage has not progressed, but it hasn't regressed.
Okay.
So I'm maintaining now.
Right.
Like 2002, I'm maintaining. I'm holding my own.
Right.
And the doctors I was in consult with were asking me, now what are you doing that's so different than everybody else?
Yeah.
And I started to tell them. And when I would feel the sweat come off my body after a run and I would come into my house and I would drink a glass of water, I could actually taste the water. When I'm outside running, for the first time in my life, I began to see colors. I know it might sound trivial, but you know, these were things I'd never seen before.
No, it's beautiful. It's great.
I'd never seen these before.
Yeah.
John, and then, so it became 1 mile, became 2 miles. And of course, I have a compulsive behavior thing going on, all right?
Right.
So one,
replace it, sure.
One, you know, one is not enough, 100, you know, one's too many, 100's not enough in miles or drinks or whatever. And I'm sitting there going, I'm beginning to like this guy.
Wow.
I'm beginning to like this guy. I can actually look in a mirror and not say something negative, not say something that's mm-hmm. Contrite. And little by little, that change in my body and my mind was what was creating this awareness of where I want to be in my life. But the crazy part was, I also realized that if I do get out of this, I want my body to be strong enough that if I ever had a chance to go into remission and survive cancer, that if it was to ever come back again, I've given myself a lot of weapons to battle it.
Right.
And I'll tell you, folks, everybody that's gone through this, and if you're thinking about this, just this last six weeks, I went into my primary care physician, and he asked me to, he found a spot inside me, and I went in to do a CAT scan. And the thing about, even though you're surviving cancer or you're in recovery, everything is magnified, John. If there's a bruise, you're waiting for it to heal. If there's a cut, will it heal? If I have a bad ache in my back, what is that from?
Right.
It doesn't go away, all right? Just because we're in remission and we're surviving this, it does. Those are the danger zones in my mind that I'm always up against.
Right.
So the harder I would work, I knew that I've done my work on my body, that I gave myself a fighting chance. So when I went for the CAT scan and I went in for all the tests that they were, the blood draws, I did 3 different blood profiles.
Right.
I was clean as a whistle.
Oh, right. Really?
Uh-huh. And I was so relieved. I was so relieved that unless you've been there, it's so hard to explain, but sitting in your car and all of a sudden you realize, my God, I got another day. Well, I've got another day. Now, look, I'm no angel. You know, I still eat sugar.
I'm going to ask you a question, though, because you told me earlier that you never have a bad day.
That's right.
And when you first started this battle to beat the cancer, it was a reward chemistry. You put exercise as your reward. Your body gave you the feedback that said, you're getting stronger, and it gave you this reward. Which is, you know, sort of how this whole culture works, this reward chemistry. But somewhere along the line, that changed from needing the reward, I would say from needing love to being love. Mm-hmm. And that's what sort of struck me about you, is that somewhere along the way, you went from that place of needing exercise to feed you and armor you up for the next battle, which is still there. And we have it, and there's nothing wrong with that. But something else took place in your head, which was your attitude. Like, that's your given. You have this thing you do. It's your armor. You protect. You get your strong body. That's the reward chemistry. It's always going to be there for all of us. But somehow, you went from needing love to, in addition to that, being love, which means that somehow you created some attitude where there's never a bad day. You want to be, you always tell me that, if you're in somebody's life, you want to. How do you say it? I want to be a positive influence in their life and never be negative. Talk to me about that part, like that incredible positive attitude that you had. What was that like? And talk to me about that.
Oh, absolutely. Well, I'd had so much of a negative life.
Yeah.
That I didn't know what positive was. Yeah. I didn't know what that was. You know, and one of the things I've shared with John that I believe is, if I can't add to your life, I certainly won't take from it. You know, and I came from a violent background. I had an alcoholic father, you know, and it's on and on, this story of this is the type of life it had. So I really had no skills of positive mental attitudes. Everything for me had to be, it seemed to be a battle about this or that. But I realized that I was walking around angry all the time. And that anger was like blaming people, blaming circumstances, taking on all those genres and saying it's this fault, that fault, whatever fault it is, it's not my fault, I'm the good guy here. And I begin to realize that, no, that's not true. That's not true at all. I was as bad and as big a jerk as anybody. And I began to realize that maybe this anger that I was carrying and maybe this self-loathing that was going on was actually the reason I'm in stage 4 lymphoma. And why is it when I'm there I feel horrible, and yet when I'm out and I get the chance to see the palm trees and the ocean in California and I'm out running along the beach, I'm going, I want to stay more in this mindset. How do I keep more in this mindset? And it came back to just I began to realize that, you know, everybody in this world has a sack of rocks. We all carry a sack of rocks, man. We all keep it in a closet or this or that. And that's all up, you know, that's wherever they are. But for me, I had to start giving myself the gift of me. I wanted to learn if I could be a nice guy. I wanted to learn if I really did deserve to be loved. And I wanted to go one step farther. I wanted to learn and know if I could love.
Yeah.
All right? Because my interpretation of love is very skewed. My world of love comes with violence. And
your childhood, you mean?
My childhood, yes. Yeah. Going back to my childhood and everything. And believe me, I've been blessed to have people who have loved me. I've been very grateful to have people that have loved me that I didn't know what to do with it. I had no place to go with it.
Yeah.
And when I started giving myself the benefit of the doubt, and I started to look at, there's a better way here. I know this one way. I know this one way. And I know what it can give me, which is not much. Why not just swing the pendulum another way and start giving myself some true stories to play in my mind? And I will share with you, never, ever, ever, ever estimate the power of what we have between our ears. Because as I started to regress or go through treatment and start getting farther away from stage 4 to stage 3 to stage 2 to stage 1, the empowering part of my mental thought kept growing stronger and stronger. And I know it was because, for the simple fact, I had something tactile. I was looking at stage four cancer. Mm-hmm. I was living with it. But I could also see it going away.
Yeah.
So see, I had that that a lot of people maybe don't have.
Yeah.
See, I had that.
Right.
And that's kind of where we're starting.
And
now.
I can sure see how that would give you a whole level of self-worth. You're beating the cancer. You
yes.
prove that to yourself. But you also learn how to love, which
yes.
means instead of it all going this way, you found something else that was what? As good, better, worse than going this way. What was it like when you learned how to actually love?
Actually, what it came down to, John, is I began to learn how to trust.
Okay.
Right? So long before love ever came bounding
right.
down the street.
Sure, right.
I had huge trust issues.
Sure.
And they stem from abusive childhood to a doctor to, you know, relationships that didn't work.
Right.
On and on and on. So once I started to believe, trusting that I could somehow believe in me, trust in my own thought process.
So the first step was you, because you were seeing yourself pulling out of this
yes.
alcoholic mindset,
yes, the fog,
cancer,
yes.
this diagnosis, you saw it changing, you started trusting in you.
Yes,
and
for the first time.
And then from there, you took some risks to trust others?
To start trusting others. The doctors that were around me at that particular time were not telling me I can't do this, I shouldn't do that. They were encouraging me to stay on the course that I was on.
Right.
And believe it or not, the only medication I was taking was an aspirin.
Right.
And to continue just that mindset. Now, every 6 weeks or 6 months, I was going in and getting the blood markers to see where we were at.
Right.
And every time we would go in there, I would have huge trust issues. Because first of all, do I trust these markers that are coming?
Yeah.
Do I trust the person that took the blood out of my arm? Do I trust the lab people that are doing this?
Sure.
On and on and on.
Yeah.
And finally, I had to let all that go and just say, those are the cards I can't deal with. I only can deal with what I can have right here, right now, and that's all within this frame.
Yeah.
And once but I will tell everybody, it is the most beautiful, empowering thing when you start to believe in yourself. And do you get to keep that all the time? No. There are days it goes away.
Yeah, sure. You know? Human.
We're human. There are days I doubt.
Yeah.
But I've now given myself an opportunity to say, well, wait a minute. I have a woman in my life. She always tells me she's a beautiful woman. Without her, I don't know where I'd be, because she supported me tremendously through a lot of fights in my life. And, you know, it's hard when, you know, love sometimes lets you get ugly. And it's a tough thing to do. And she loved me through some growing pains that I was having. And when somebody started loving me, even when they saw me ugly, the trust was unbelievable. Because now that I started trusting myself, I began, John, to start trusting that love that was coming from somebody else. This person was loving me not because of anything but me.
You're right.
Just me, man.
Right.
That was it.
So what did you do with that?
I've become a hell of a lot better man, buddy.
Were you able to feel safe enough inside of yourself to take a risk and actually experience the love that's inside of you?
Absolutely. For the first time in my life, and I meant the first time in my life, I've been given the gift of unconditional love in the terms that I know it. And that being that, you know,
what did that feel like?
Compared to
a lifetime of what you were battling through? Because this is the change between reward chemistry and now. Because, you know, I can go on and on about the science that supports the concept that we are love. And you tasted it. Most of us won't let ourselves taste it and therefore won't live the life that we really want to live, because it's too scary to take that risk. Because without the constant rewards coming in to give us that next feeling of reward, I'm safe, I'm safe, I'm safe, we don't want to take the risk to take a risk to be unsafe. When you were down and dirty and she loved you anyway, She was like the sun shining light on a flower, and the flower felt safe enough from the inside out to open up those petals.
Yes.
I want to know who came out.
Well, it is still evolving.
Yeah, sure. It's a lifetime.
It's a lifetime of evolving, but you know, it's when you actually can sit in a room and you can have somebody in this room ask you a question. And you come from a place of truth, and you know that this person has seen you in such a bad place that you can tell them whatever is on your heart and your mind, and you know that you won't be judged for it, that it's not going to be cast aside like whatever, and it's not a want or a need. I meant, the gift I gave myself through all of this was the fact that I allowed it. And when I started to allow it,
allowed
the love and the trust from just myself, when I started to trust me enough to where I could sit there and go, for once in your life, David, just let this person love you. It all came back from every little step we've taken in our lives. Everything we've ever done in our lives comes to certain points, and on these certain points, the one thing I wanted to do was once in my life, I wanted to be able to love and love somebody. And if it was to go away, I would never change my mind that it was the best thing that ever happened to me. Because I had a grandmother that loved that way, you know. And this is the mindset that started to come from all these negative things, all these terrible things. All I started doing was giving myself permission, as she taught me to do. She said, David, say yes. Just start saying yes. Doesn't matter what.
Right. It's your grandmother or your...
Or the Jen. Yeah, just start saying yes.
So let's go back for a second. Your dad was an alcoholic.
Yes.
You lived in had a pretty broken childhood.
Yes.
We all are hardwired to want that approval from mom and dad. That obviously didn't come.
No.
So we take our raw material, whoever we are, and we, you know, create a personality to navigate this crazy childhood that we grow up in. And that personality we end up projecting on a screen for an entire lifetime, but it oftentimes has nothing to do with who we are.
That's right.
And that was the journey that you took. You found yourself through this process. And
yes,
you're content in true love and loving fully, realizing that your nature is to be loved. I can have rewards along the way, which is great. I can have goals and accomplish my goals. But the thing, the magical piece, is that you're sitting now in a relationship that gives you the freedom and the safety and the trust to be experienced true love.
Yes.
Which is who you are. Which, by the way, your microbes, your cells, your genetics, your genes, epigenetically, that... And there's really good science to support that. It supports longevity, health. I mean, it's what makes us grow. So what I want to know is that who did you have to create to navigate your childhood? What personality sort of type did you create? And then let's take that to the adult David and see how we actually broke free.
Good question. Yeah, well, I want to regress because, first of all, being raised in an alcoholic family.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry if any of you have been out there, but what I'm going to tell you, you'll understand. You become multidimensional, and they're not positive ways. I learned to become a liar. I learned to cheat. I learned to steal. I learned to create whatever possible environment I could possibly create to survive. Because in an alcoholic home, you never know what's going to happen next. Your whole life is based on walking on eggshells. I'm not talking just Christmas time and New Year. I'm talking every day that you live and breathe. You have to be on point.
On guard.
You have to be on guard. And what I realized as I started going through the cancers and the treatments and all these kind of things, I kept thinking, well, this has got to be part of what's happened to me. I mean, my body was constantly in the, you know, between the fight and the flight. I was living in the fight.
Sure.
I'm not one to flee. I'm wanting to stay in there and go whatever.
So you became the angry fighter.
I became the angry fighter, and I said, you're not going to get the best of me.
And if things didn't work out your way, you blame them. It was them.
That's
they
it.
Were screwed
you,
up.
You screwed it up. This is what you do. I became that angry, you know, fighter, and I'll be the last thing you'll remember, all right? Because that's what I wanted. You're not going, if you don't remember anything else, you're going to remember me.
Okay.
And through, when I started to go through all these treatments, and when I started to look at all these prognoses, you know, when I went into alcohol treatment, my father wouldn't have a thing to do with me. He wouldn't talk to me for several years, because what I later found out is my disease was a reflection onto him. And so I spent an amazing amount of time and years trying to understand what the word compassion means. What my idea of it was, and what maybe everybody else's was. Maybe what the priest's idea was of compassion, or the monk's idea of compassion, which sure the hell wasn't my idea of what compassion was. But coming from that background,
what was your idea of compassion?
Violence.
Violence?
Oh, violence. It was violent, protecting myself, protecting my mother, protecting my sister from my father.
So you were the rose that got trampled and trampled and trampled and decided to grow thorns to stop them from trampling you.
Beautiful way to say it, John. Exactly.
And that was your, that became your personality. I was a thorny guy. You mess with me, you're going to pay.
Yeah. And now, I was also voted the most friendliest in my senior class. So there's your dichotomy.
Right.
I'm the warrior this way, but I wanted to be, the other side of it was I wanted to be popular, I wanted to be loved, I wanted to be all these other things. I wasn't in my own home. And
right, so you made up for it.
Up for it. But the violence that came in that world wasn't always bad, because what I began to realize is it kept telling me, this is not what you want. This is not the way you want to live your life.
Yeah.
There's a better way. There's a better way. There's a better way.
Yeah.
That was resonating through my, I remember as a little boy, that there's a better way. But for now, you have to get through this.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
It's incredible. You know, I hope everybody can sort of...
I hope so, too.
Thank you so much for sharing this whole story, because I just feel I'm so right with you. And the end result was that you were able to, you know, feel through trusting yourself, beginning to trust others. You know, I don't think because of who you are is such a really beautiful person. I think
Thank you, John. You
created this environment where Jen, your partner, came into your life and loved you unconditionally.
Right.
You felt that, and that gave you a platform for you to begin to, you know, really take off and be, you know, this bright light. You know, David is you know, I hope you're getting it, but he's the way David talks, whenever you talk to him, he's like the most very outspoken, positive human being. When I first met him, I was like, wow, this guy is just all about living and practicing what he preaches. And he went through, and I knew there was a journey there, and I wanted to know what it was, and I'm getting the full story today. I've gotten pieces, and it's an incredible journey. So my question then is,
yes,
our goal today is to have people realize, okay, you had an incredible journey. What is your message to people to get them to trust, to take a risk, to be loved, and to take a risk to love fully, give fully, care fully? Was that the thing that's filling you up now? Is it the love? Or is it the combination of still exercising and having this armor and then having this place where you can love fully? Help me understand what makes you tick and how we can help other people maybe, you know, take strides to living the dream. And are you at this point living the dream?
Yeah, you know, the armor is more pliable now.
Yeah.
I still wear it.
You can take it off when you want
to. I can take it off now. I have a choice.
It snaps.
It's not snap. It's Velcro now.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it really comes down to one, specifically in this day and age, we are so bombarded by so many things, all the killings in the world, everything that's going on, it's becoming harder and harder to be able to understand that we live in fear.
Right.
On a consummate. It's always something's coming through you by being fear-based. And I think if we could just all just give ourselves one deep breath and say, you know, that's not... I don't think it's so much going in a direction of what you want. It's really, I've spent majority of my life figuring out what I don't want. And through that process of eliminating things, now the things that I do want are starting to come into play. But I'm starting to wear an older man's clothes now.
Yeah, there's some wisdom brewing.
So wisdom is coming now along with this, John.
Sure.
It's like, and you know, everybody sitting here with John, for example, this is very cathartic for me. It's not something I go and run around and talk to people about. This is a very personal moment that I really love sharing with all of you, and I love sharing with John because he's the type of man I could feel like I could do this with. And you know, just don't let the world keep nicking away at you, because it will if you let it. It will continuously do that. We've got to find these moments through something. Find one thing. I don't care if people say you're ridiculous if you ever do it, but please just find one thing that you love to do. One thing. Is it painting? Is it dancing? Is it going for a walk? Whatever it is, start there. Give that one gift to yourself and don't let anybody take it from you.
Yeah, yeah. And I think when you do that, you know, we know that when you do something that you love, you're laying down pavement in your brain.
You're rewiring.
Pavement, that is joy pavement.
Yes.
And when you have a lifetime where people have said, no, you can't, you shouldn't, you're not good enough, you're not loved, and we have a hard wire as young children to want that approval, you know, in Ayurveda, the game of life is to realize that we all want that approval, but we're never going to be satisfied by it. And at some point, you have to play the game of life and realize that I'm going to stop reacting to their crazy behavior and start doing me. And doing me is what you did. You did the exercise. You started chipping step by step, brick by brick. You've built this foundation where someone saw that and fell in love with you because that was the real you. Ayurveda, we think of it, Ayur means life, Veda means truth. It's the truth of your life. You created a platform where the truth of David could come out and someone fell in love with you and allowed you to fully blossom. And, you know, that isn't like that you're done. It's a... We have 80 year plus, mm-hmm. whatever we have, because we need that much time mm-hmm. to figure this crazy thing
out. Figure it out.
But along the way, if we can get to some of these decisions quicker and sooner, then the quicker we can begin laying down that pavement of joy and love and giving and sharing and realize that the truth of us is thrives and lives longer and is more joyful when we're actually, you know, realizing that the reward chemistry, which is a big part of us,
absolutely.
Isn't the only thing. That there's another half of us, maybe the more important half, that thrives and stays alive and evolves even when we're, you know, loving fully. And when you do the thing you love, like for you, it was exercise. It was like, mm-hmm. whoa, I love that. And you still love it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's
a lifestyle.
It's a lifestyle.
Yeah.
And for someone else, it might be something else. But
yep.
but finding, like you said, it's so beautiful. You said it's so simple and it's so perfect because that's exactly what if people could just do that one thing. And then the other thing is as you become more aware Ayurvedically, the whole point of Ayurveda is these yoga, breathing, meditation, what the monks taught you, those were awareness tools to help us become more self-aware. Aware of what? Aware of what unconscious behaviors we created to navigate a crazy childhood that are still being projected on the screen today as an adult. And how can I now, as an adult, take action to free myself from those crazy patterns and let who I am out? Because the clock's ticking.
It's ticking.
And it might not ever happen. And that's not acceptable. And that is the wake up without the wake up call.
That is it.
You know what I mean? I want to remind people we're going to wrap up here in a minute, but if you have any questions, you can push star 2. I'll check and see if any questions are being typed up. I can't imagine anybody asking questions because I'm just sort of mesmerized by the whole thing. Hang on, let's see what we have here. Questions and answers. Can you suggest some massage oils, Abhyanga oils, and herbs for women and tea who are going through chemo and radiation? Generally really quick for chemo and radiation, what I recommend is a lymphatic massage oil that we use, which actually helps the skin-associated lymph move to keep that moving. An herb called Chaya Vamprash, which is an herbal antioxidant, nutritive ricina, which is super easy to digest. I give that those two things with my chemotherapy patients and make sure you're getting about maybe 1 to 2 milligrams of iodine per day to protect you as well. Those are some things. The next question is, please continue. This is gorgeous stuff. It really is.
You.
Thank you, David. Really, truly, honestly, it's fantastic. Can he please explain specifically what treatments he did for the cancer?
We started out, actually it was with massage. It was changing my diet. It was herbal teas. Went into a whole Eastern treatment that I was never familiar with. I was always basically going through just what the doctors were prescribing, but I did get into herbal teas and the massage and meditation. Breathing, for example, was one of the most important things I had learned through all of this. Just the fact of how amazing exercising my lungs had become, mm-hmm. and creating this for my mind and body. I mean, just deep breathing. Running was what was the thing that got me to where I really started breathing and utilizing all these parts of my body.
But, I mean, chemo radiation, you did a couple of treatments, but that was.
I realized at that particular time, if I had to do this, I wasn't going to make it.
Right. Yeah. Wow. I've got a couple of people on the phone here. One from Sandy Point, Idaho. Are you there?
I'm here.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi. Hey, I've been listening. This is wonderful. Thank you so much for sharing this amazing story.
Thank you.
It's so inspiring. I'm also looking into my own practice and these kinds of things. Do you feel that it's necessary, either of you, to look at the past in terms of bringing to us our state of love? Or do we just allow the old past to be there and repave our neurons, our neural network, into this new path of awareness?
Oh, that's a fantastic question.
Excellent.
Thank you so much, Dave. Go ahead.
Well, for me personally, I needed to go back and use different scenarios in my life as mile markers, because I need to be able to checkpoint and see where I came from, because I'm never sure, even though I like to tell you I trust a lot, I still have apprehension about where the future lies. But for me, going backwards, I need to see where I came from, because that in that arena, that's where my honesty lies. That's where I stop telling the stories. It keeps me in the real world. It keeps me very on point, because I don't feel I have, as I share with John, I don't have the luxury to have really bad days anymore. I just don't have that luxury. I can't. That's not one I want to own. But I love your question. But one of the things I began to realize that has happened to me is I started letting go of people in my life, because if I felt like I had to be the one that was 70% there all the time and they were only 30%, then that wasn't the people that I wanted to build in my life that was, you know, going to support me, and vice versa. And once I started eliminating, and it's hard to do, I'm not saying that this is easy, but I will tell you this. There are a lot of people sometimes that like the place that you're in. They want you to be in misery. They want you to live there, because that's, you happen to be their beacon of light. And I refuse to have these people in my life. So I started cutting them out. And what's amazing is we start letting go of a lot of those things. New people come into our lives that are different. there's no room sometimes for them when we keep all these other people around.
I think sometimes you get stuck being the broken one.
Yes.
And a lot of people get a lot of self-worth by fixing the broken one. And the broken one stays broken and then resents the fixers. That happens in relationships and it happens a lot of ways. And I think, you know, stepping out of that and changing your environment, changing your people, you know, allows you to have relationships that are heart to heart, really true. I let me take a crack at answering that question too. I do think it's important to understand who we all created as a young child to navigate our childhood. And whether it's good or bad or indifferent, it doesn't matter. We all create a personality.
Yes.
And now you got to figure out, who did you create? What aspects of that personality are still serving you today and are actually quite wonderful? But what aspects of that personality aren't so wonderful? We're all going to experience this when we go in a couple of weeks when everybody goes back home for the holidays and they start acting like a four-year-old again, you know, doing the same dumb thing, reacting to their parents or their brother or brother-in-law or whatever, again and again, the same old way. And you go, why am I letting that person make me into this crazy person? And so there is a history there. But that history, there's an old saying in Ayurveda that says, to the extent that someone affects you is to the extent that it's your karma. Karma means action, really, only. So to the extent that someone negatively affects you, like your mom at the holidays or whatever, or dad or crazy, whatever, is to the extent that that person is providing an opportunity for you to free yourself from letting that person make you into something that you're not and be free. So from that perspective, I do think that history matters, but not to be dragged through the emotional
exactly.
mud and not to be like, I was the victim and they hurt me and now I gotta all that. No, you mentioned the word compassion. The nature of the human being is either to react, throw darts back, you know, react back, be violent back, abandon them, run away, or judge them in some way. And when you're doing that, you are creating behavior based on their behavior, which is not wonderful always, and not the reflection of their true self. Usually they've been hurt and they're projecting the thorns from their rose and we're reacting to their thorns. So we're becoming the reaction to thorns, which is just probably more thorns.
More thorns.
Right? So what if you realize that your nature is low? We have the capacity to be angry and survive and be violent if necessary, but our essence is love. And if we acted based on that, which is, and compassion is a great way to do that, because compassion is you realizing why the person was mean to you. Because they were probably hurt. They probably had an alcoholic dad or mom. They probably lived a rough life. And they created a personality that ended up having some thorns on
yes,
their rose.
Absolutely.
And that's what you're interacting with. So if you realize in the game of life that we're here to be aware of when we're reacting to other people's behavior, doing them, and how we can take little baby steps of being true to your true nature, loving more fully the people that are safe to love. Like, you had this incredible gift in your life where Jen came in your life and she made it totally safe for you to go, really? I can
feel that?
I can love you?
I can do this?
I can let that really delicate thing inside of me show up?
I can actually like me
crushed,
for loving
you. Right? I mean, could you ever love before you met her? I mean, would it be like, what if you didn't get love back? You'd be like completely clobbered, right?
You know, and I've had very fortunate to have women that are still in my life that have loved me and I love them back. And I think it comes down to the simple fact that, you know, not trying to put any more conditions on it than it is and just to let it be and let it happen. And I was always trying to finagle it, always trying to steer it the way I wanted it to go. This way, not every day is a rose-colored glasses kind of day, but I know now that, again, I have this gift of being here, and I just want to take everything I've gone through in my life, and by you just calling here, you know, it tells me that you want to change in your life, and I think that this is the most powerful thing, is just giving yourself permission to change, whatever it is, just change.
Thank you so much for that call. I'm going to ask one more question. We have one more caller, and then we're going to wrap it up and let David go home and give him a really big hug, because I want to do that. From Burlington, Vermont, from Burlington, are you there?
so much, all of you, for your share and your wisdom and your encouragement, and I just really appreciate it.
And, thank you.
You know, my question is this. I have had, I have multiple health issues, and they're bad enough that I cannot work. And, you know, I grew up in a typical dysfunctional family, and the message was continually from, you know, three major members, and today still one member, is you're not enough, and there's something wrong with you, and you should be different, on and on and on. I have spent a lifetime trying to get better. You know, between, you know, different kinds of therapies, different health practitioners, so on and so forth. And, you know, I don't look back at the past. I don't have a lot of anger. I've done a lot of forgiveness work, on and on and on. And yet I still feel, because of, you know, just you bringing up that victim role, I still feel like I've got sort of this victim role in my, DNA almost, even though, again, I don't have lots of anger or any of that stuff about the past. And I am, you know, and I have been on and off in therapy. I'm 60, and I guess my question, and so somehow I feel like it's about a different approach. I've been doing the same old, same old, and I've done an incredible amount of research. I've tried so many different things, but somehow, again, I feel like it's about looking at my life and in a whole different way, and experiencing life in a whole different way. Even though, you know, I do a lot, I've done a lot, and I still do a lot of spiritual work. I've been in a 12-step program for 100 years. You know, but I still do not feel a healed person. And I feel like by now I should.
Thank you so much. And I'm going to have David give an answer to that, and I'll give a quick answer to that. And I'm going to go ahead and just kind of mute you so you can just listen in without any feedback, okay? So thank you so much for that call. David, go ahead.
You know, first of all, having somebody in your life telling you this all the time is one of the things I did change in my life. I realized if that was the only thing they were going to bring to the table in my life, then I guess I could live without it. But you also were talking about, you know, you sometimes feel of being a victim, and I don't think there's anything wrong with the feeling of being a victim. I think you should embrace it, but maybe this time just become a victim of loving yourself, of becoming a victim of trying to have the strength to change some of the people in your life. You know, there's being a victim, I did not mean for it to have negative connotations, but it always seems to be that's what it, you know, what comes from that. But we can be a victim of a lot of different things, a lot of beautiful things. And I hope that, you know, you sound like you're working very hard at changing everything in your life. And sometimes we don't see the results. We don't see them for a long, long time. And sometimes when we do, they're very, very small, but they're there. As long as we can just stay present and look for these kind of things. But I honestly would change. I got tired of people telling me that I was worthless and I was not good enough, or why am I doing this? And it's a hard decision to make. But I also had to realize that when I started making those decisions, I started to increase the value of who I felt I was worth and who I was. And that's what started to change my whole mindset.
And I think that also, what David experienced was this incredible journey of realizing that, you know, he first had to relove himself. He saw when he did that and he started caring for his body responded, he got feedback. And then he was gifted in this incredible, beautiful evolution of realizing that there's something else beyond reward chemistry and making my body stronger. There's this thing called love that he tapped into. And it was, you know, his partner loving him, but, you know, the joy comes really when you experience, you know, you loving, period. And having someone that makes that experience safe enough for you to do that is magical, eternal. I call it true love. And I always say that there's baby steps you can take along the way. You know, in someone, there must be someone in your life who you love and care for. And probably that person, you may find yourself in ways and times holding back loving fully. Even though you love them, we still let ourselves react to the stuff that they don't do right, or we're upset with. And, you know, they don't take out the trash, or they don't clean the yard or clean the garage the way they should, or whatever it might be. So we focus on those things as opposed to letting ourselves act on the love and the care. So one way to do it is, like David said so beautifully, find something you love to do and go do it. Lay down some joy pavement, some love pavement. Or just start finding someone in your life that you love and you trust and you feel safe with, and just start to take random acts of kindness. Lay down some pavement. Act on that love. A text, hope you're having a great day. Just want to tell you I love you. Just lay down pavement throughout the day that facilitates in your brain that it's okay. I will lose nothing if I act on this love. Yeah, he's got to take the trash and he's got to make money and he's got to paint the yard, paint the house or the fence or whatever. There's things that need to be done, whatever that might be. But still, that's not going to stop me from loving, from me being me. And I think that's the message here. We all have a passion inside of us. We all have something that we love to do, and we feel there's something special inside of us that wants to come out. And I feel like the way to get to that is to start to is to play, you know, with true love, which is you first experiencing the truth of you and then letting it out. And I just can't thank David enough for coming here today and sharing such a personal story and a personal journey. And, you know, and the cool thing about it is, I mean, you, in my mind, are one of the most positive people that I've met. I know today we sort of brought it down talking about all the yucky stuff, but that's generally, David's like this, you know, all positive, doesn't talk about this negative stuff. You know, and I want to thank you for letting us talk about that.
Thank you, John.
And also, I think we all know that this is what life is. Like, this is why we want to live tomorrow, because there's more.
This is our moment.
This is more joy. There's more love. There's more people to. There's more. There's constantly things we can learn and love more, give more, and be more fully our true self, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely,
yeah.
John.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you so much, John.
Thank you.
And everybody, thank you very much.
Yeah. Thank you.